Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Wednesday on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you for the first half hour. Sean Carey on his way in. Steve Jones also on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Glad to be with you here today. Action-packed show today once again, but first, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU. Like us on Facebook as well at Steve Jones Show,
stevejonesshow.com.
And good afternoon, Steve.
How are you, Matt? Good to be with you.
Good to be with you here for about the first half hour. Sean's on his way back in route as we speak.
Listening to the show and yes. Panicking with each mile. We were going to bring the suit on in this segment.
I haven't seen him around.
Yeah, and either of clients. All right, so what? Come on, you want to be that quick. You want to be that quick, don't you?
All you.
I was talking earlier yesterday about Nick Dunn out of the University of Maryland, Shikellamy High School zone, third round pick. Fifth round,
153 overall, pick. I believe, yeah.
He was rated 174 going into the draft. The Cardinals really like him. Hits from the left side. Can play shortstop, but also second base. I think they look at him as a second baseman at the next level. But, I mean, I'm going to have to check and see. But I'd be 80% sure that he'd be coming here.
That's a good sign for him. Play locally to start things off.
That's what I mean, play locally. Not only that, I mean, but the first three games of the season are up in Williamsport.
That's right. Next week.
Yeah. Next week.
That's a good turnaround.
Yeah, but that's good, though. They changed the draft rules years ago that really made this league better, but I also think it's better for the development of the player. So let's take it from the player point of view. It used to be that you had until August 15th to sign. And let's face it, if you wait that long to sign, you're not going to play.
That's half the season already, practically, for short A.
For short day, it's 75%.
There you go.
It's 75% of the season. Jameson Taillon, for example, signed August 15th. He came here to State College for 3 weeks and signed autographs. He wasn't going to pitch. What are you going to pitch him? He hadn't pitched since May. So you're not going to pitch him. Now you have to sign by the All-Star game. The Major League All-Star Game. So July 10, 11, 12, somewhere around there, is the deadline to sign. If not, then you go back into next year's draft. And take, for example, a guy like Nick Dunn. Right? Nick Dunn just got playing. Oh, a little bit of a break, boom, back playing again. It keeps him in the rhythm of the season. And that's the part I like, is I think you get a better chance at development being in the rhythm of the season. The players they're bringing up here initially that are not drafted and are already on the roster, they've been going through extended spring training in Florida anyway. That's why you'll see, for example, pitchers on opening night. Yeah, it may be opening night up here, but they're stretched out. They'll pitch six, seven innings in the opening game because they're already used to pitching six or seven innings. They've been doing it down in Florida. So for them, it is a continuation of the season. And I think you get a better product, a better development by keeping the players in rhythm. I remember when Harrison Bader came here. He had just come off the College World Series. And the first week of the season, he comes right out and belts two home runs. Right? Because Harrison Bader literally went from Omaha to State College. Now, Harrison Bader now is in the majors with the Cardinals. But, you know, a guy that's in rhythm in the season, yeah, I think it makes a big difference. And so that brings it back to Nick Dunn. I mean, there's not a lot of time off between the end of the Maryland season and now. Perfect. I think he'd come in here, and I think it'd be great for him. I think it'd be great for the area.
Does he get playing time right away, do you think?
Yeah. They didn't draft him 153rd overall to have him watch.
That's true.
Yeah.
This is going to be great. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm hoping he comes here. I mean, nothing's assured.
What would make him go to Johnson City to start off in the rookie ball, just to kind of more or less get his feet wet, maybe? But
I think it's a waste of time sending him to Johnson City. There's certain guys I can see it. He's not one of them. He's not one of them.
But we want him to start here, no question.
Right. I mean, Jordan Hicks is throwing 105 right now in the majors. He started his year in Johnson City, but as a pitcher. And then they moved him to State College. And you know what's interesting about him is that Hicks is doing the same thing in the majors he did here in State College. He didn't throw 105 here. He topped out at 98. So he had this hard fastball. He'd throw between 93, 98, 94, 98, whatever. But the oddity was is that despite throwing like that, I remember after every start, I'd think the same thing. Man, he didn't strike out a lot of guys. You look at him at the major league level, he'll throw 100 to 105. He doesn't strike out a lot of people. It's the darndest thing. But he sure does throw hard. I mean, that's the definition of good old-fashioned country hardball. Hey, Phillies won last night, 6-1. They got a really good starting performance on the mound, and they got six runs. Doesn't mean all is solved, but they did a heck of a job. And that gets them back on track. I mean, that, you know, you want to follow it up and do it again. But they walked out of the ballpark last night feeling like they, you know, like they got something done. They did something well last night, because they did. Now, you come out of San Francisco where you did nothing. And to their credit, they did absolutely nothing in San Francisco. I mean, I'm not even sure they toured anything.
One run, and that was off the bat of the pitcher.
Yeah, that's it, Jake Arrieta. But that's a veteran who's won a World Series. I'm sorry, that's a person I think you've got to listen to. You've got to listen to him. I'm glad he said something. Okay? He's the guy that's pitched on the biggest stage. Okay? He knows what it takes over 162 games to get there. He's lived it. Those are the people that should be talking. All right. No offense. I mean, I don't need Nick Williams saying something. He doesn't bring enough cachet to the table to do it. Jake Arrieta does. So, and I also give great credit to Gabe Kapler, who handled it right. Gabe Kapler said, no, I'm glad he said it. It's good. That's fine. I mean, and, you know, Gabe Kapler has done certain things that are interesting. He's also done certain things that have shown maturity on his part. By the way, we mentioned earlier in the week about the Yankees might be forced to play three games in a 24-hour span. Major League Baseball said that the Yankees game with the Blue Jays on Sunday the 8th has been moved from an 8 p.m. start on ESPN to 1:07 in the afternoon.
The right move.
It is the right move. All right. The Yankees were going to boycott all the ESPN people.
As they should have.
Now, the people they'd be avoiding have nothing to do with the decision, but it would be symbolic. They get too much anyway.
And that Sunday night game, Steve, is now Dodgers-Angels. Just looking ahead here on the 8th.
Oh,
which is not bad.
The Dodgers are playing really well. It's interesting. The Dodgers are playing the Pirates tonight. Both teams are 30-30. But the Dodgers have come back to 30-30. The Pirates have fallen to 30-30. It's a big difference. Yeah.
And I guess if in ESPN's defense, Steve, I'm just looking at the entire schedule for Sunday the 8th. They had some slim pickings, so I can guess why they wanted to try and go after the Yankees. But you had Dodgers-Angels, which I think is a good matchup to take. But they also had, now it doesn't speak a lot of star power per se, but it's probably the best matchup of that whole day on Sunday is a first-place matchup right now between the Braves and the Brewers.
Yeah, but here's what I'm bothered by is why ESPN wanted to do it. Because they're doing their all-star selection around the game. You're like, oh, for goodness sakes.
ESPN is focusing on the money now, Steve, and not the matchups and the integrity of what they're broadcasting.
I feel like in the last 2 or 3 months, they've tried to get on a track. But here's what I would fear if I'm running ESPN. That I got so off the rails the last 3 years in so many different areas that I've lost so many people that am I going to get them back?
Well,
that's
said.
That's what would worry me. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Sean is en route. Not that I'm not enjoying spending some great time with Matt here, but Sean is en route. So right now, that person that just made the illegal turn on 61. Okay, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Warriors and Cavaliers coming up tonight. By the way, the Belmont Stakes will be Saturday. Steve Bornstein is going to join us. We'll get to Steve in the show later today to talk about the run by Justify to see if Justify can win the Triple Crown and the first since American Pharoah 3 years ago. So that's coming up on the show. RJ Anderson is on the show today. We'll talk about Major League Baseball with him. It's amazing how the Mariners have vaulted into first place since Robinson Cano left. Wait a minute. It's not how it's supposed to work, is it? But Cano left, and guess what? The Mariners are surging.
Funny how things work out.
And tonight, the Warriors and the Cavaliers, Andre Iguodala is scheduled to be back in the lineup tonight. Okay.
Not that the Warriors really missed him, but this just assures it all now.
Well, I think they beat Houston in 5 games if Iguodala plays the whole way through. He just gives them that one. I mean, is he a superstar? No. Is he a really, really good player? Yes. And it gives you another really, really good player who can defend on the floor, but also somebody you have to guard at the other end. Makes a big difference.
I loved him when he was on the Sixers. I didn't want to see him go. I was in the minority in saying that, of course.
Yeah, the Sixers were in a different spot. Oh, wait a minute. Different spot? We don't even know if they're going to have a GM at the end of the week.
I still am shocked that is still ongoing at this point. Although I'm slightly not surprised, but...
I had said on the show Wednesday or Thursday, one of the two, and I said, look, if he's the general manager by Monday, you'll be okay. This is last week. And when I was talking to Dick Girardi, Dick was here on Friday for the Coaches versus Cancer Tournament. So the two of us probably talked for a couple hours on Friday night. And somebody brought up Brian Colangelo. And I said something about the Monday thing. And Dick said, geez, if he's the GM by the weekend, you know, that'll tell you everything. Okay. Well, the weekend came and went, and he's still there. Monday came and went, he's still there. Well, now, here we are in the middle of the week, he's still there. But they haven't finished whatever investigation. This must be complicated.
I mean, they did hire that law firm, Paul Weiss, in New York, and that's where I think where they are now. And apparently they talked with Colangelo, I think, again last night, or they met with each other, I think, in management, within the management, to see what they were going to do. But
yeah.
The only thing I'll say, Steve, is if there's this, I guess, this rumor or thought that they might be waiting, or the NBA is having them wait to make the announcement until after the finals are over, because it's probably going to only go four or five games. If I'm the Sixers, I'm saying the heck with that, because number one, we got to do what's best for our franchise and move on and not let this linger. But two, Adam Silver had a hand in bringing the Colangelos into the Sixers in the first place when they got rid of Sam Hinkie.
Yeah, it's true.
That just makes no sense to me from a Sixers standpoint.
Well, but here's the other part, that if I'm the Sixers, I've got the draft in 15 days. I've got NBA free agency happening in 25 days. You know, I can't be playing around for 48 hours while the NBA finals are going on. I need to have somebody in place that has a firm hand on what to do now. Sixers are at an interesting spot. Yeah. They're a really good team. How they play the draft and how they play free agency could set the franchise up for 5 years. They need to make some decisions now. The heck with what's going on with the Warriors and Cavaliers. I'd look at Adam Silver and say, that's your problem. We've got our own.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Well, Sean, you made it in.
Oh, yeah, we're here. Nothing to worry about.
You do know the show starts at 3, didn't
you? Yes. 3:08, yes.
Just want to make sure you knew that.
The escort was a little late showing up.
Yeah, but just so you
understand. Point me in the right direction.
Just so you understand how it actually works, the police escort is normally in front of your car, not in the back.
It's not even a late Friday night on a holiday weekend.
I just want to make sure. That's a message from this station and the ad council. The police escort is in the front, not the back. And nobody knows that better than R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports. R.J., welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. I want to start actually with the Seattle Mariners. Why have they been better since Robinson Cano left?
Yeah, it's a great point because we all kind of figured once he got hurt and then was suspended that their playoff chances would be dashed, and yet that hasn't been the case. You know, they went 16-5 since, and it's crazy because if you look at their numbers, they've had an offense that would rank the third worst in baseball since then if you're just looking at runs per game compared to the full season numbers of everyone else, and yet their pitching staff has been outstanding, and they've only allowed about 2.8 runs per, and they've held their opponents to, I believe it's 12 times now, they've held them 2 runs or fewer, and they've won every single one of those games. So you're talking about a staff that's been very stingy with a long ball and stingy with walks, and right now teams aren't able to beat that. You know, they're not able to score enough runs, and credit to the Mariners pitching staff for not only keeping them in there, but, helping them ascend to first place.
Right, and not only into first place, they're ahead of the Houston Astros. This is a legit first place, at least through this stage of the season, because the Astros have played well.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are arguably the best team in the American League. If not, they're certainly in the top three, and I don't think anyone saw any team really keeping in there quite like this with the Astros, not even the Angels, because they had, you know, injury concerns of their own in the rotation, but to the Mariners' credit, they're in it, and it doesn't seem like they're going to fade just yet. Although, you know, funny things happen. At the same time, though, you know, Wade LeBlanc is giving them an amazing performance out of a guy who no one really had on their radar. And, you know, Marco Gonzalez looks like a smart trade acquisition from last summer. Took him a little while to find his footing, but he's been pitching excellently of late. And, you know, there's a chance that by the time tonight's over, the Mariners have a 3-game lead in the division.
The Yankees were upset about the possibility of playing 3 games in 24 hours. That has since been resolved. The Dodgers and the Angels are going to be on Sunday Night Baseball that week. The Yankee-Toronto game will be a 1. Then they play the doubleheader with Baltimore. I want to ask you about the television component. Television is important, but is there a concern among organizations and the players that sometimes it's wag the dog with TV?
Yeah, and I think in this particular case, the concerns are valid because, as you mentioned, the Yankees have a doubleheader the next day, and by virtue of being on ESPN, their game would have been moved from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. And, you know, let's just note the Yankees are going to be on Sunday Night Baseball in another week. You know, so they would have been on Sunday Night Baseball 2 weeks in a row, and it seemed like ESPN really wanted that game because prior to that game, they were going to air the All-Star Selection Show. So it seems like they were really using the Yankees to kind of ramp up ratings elsewhere, but I think it's definitely a concern. And, you know, one of the things raging in pro sports right now is the talk about how sleep, is very important. And in order to maximize your sleep, you kind of need, you know, travel windows that allow you to maximize how much you can spend in your hotel room or at your house or whatever. So if you're a player, yeah, I think you have to be concerned about, you know, are we being put out here in order to boost television ratings when, you know, it's hurting our play. And if you're one of these teams who gets chosen a lot on Sunday Night Baseball, well, you're literally having your flight plans derailed by a network. So I think that is definitely an area of concern. And, you know, at the same time, you want that exposure. You want to help grow the game. So I don't know what the solution is there, but I'm glad that ESPN kind of kneeled, so to speak, and that there's a solution, because it had been unfair to the Yankees and their players to ask them to play basically 3 games within 24 hours.
Look, there are 162 of these. You can make accommodations for the club once in a while.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's,
you
know,
and
you and I are in the same
page. Shorter.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the Braves, because you wrote a fascinating article about the Braves, about how they made certain decisions 3-4 years ago, and those decisions are now starting to pay off. Discuss the philosophy, RJ, that went into what the Braves did, because, you know, obviously they were on top for such a long period of time, and they really hit a true rebuild. And how do you think they've handled it, and why have they handled it this way?
Yeah, so it's interesting because a few years ago, before the Braves started this rebuild, they kind of locked in a number of young players, you know, Angelton Simmons and Freddie Freeman and Craig Kimbrel, and it looked like they were set for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. And then, you know, management changed. They went with a new general manager who happened to be their assistant general manager at the time, and all of a sudden he started trading those pieces away except for Freeman. And, you know, since then they've had to change general managers again because their old general manager was involved in some, you know, shady international dealings. So Here the Braves are, and they're in first place, surprisingly, and it's due in part to the trades they made. You know, they went out there and they got Mike Foltynewicz, and they got Sean Newcomb, and they got a few other players I mentioned, you know, Dansby Swanson and Ender Inciarte, and, you know, even some of the smaller deals they've made for draft picks have really worked out for them. And so it was a questionable decision when they originally hit reset because it seemed like they were well-positioned. And yet, here they are. You know, basically all these trades have worked out in their favor. I think you can argue that the Simmons trade was a misstep because of how he's developed offensively. You know, he's went from just an elite defender to a well-rounded player who's arguably one of the best players in baseball because of that. So on the whole, I think you can say, you know, the Braves reset went well, but it's just one of those cases where a team probably started to rebuild before they needed to, and frankly, you know, started to rebuild way before they needed to, and yet they're back in, you know, a competitive mode. And it just goes to show there are a lot of different ways to build a winner. Sometimes it's through rebuilding the right way or the so-called right way, and sometimes, you know, it's by holding on to your core, going for a quicker reset. You know, you look around the league right now, the Yankees hit reset a couple years back, and the time between the beginning of that process and the end was, what, half a season? In the Braves' case, it took a few years, and in other cases, like Cincinnati, it's taken even longer. So there are a lot of different ways to build a winner, and the Braves are, you know, just an example.
What's interesting, though, about the Yankees, you know, let's take Yankees, Houston, and the Red Sox. And if you look at the three of them, they're among the three, record-wise, three of the top four teams, because Seattle obviously is in that mix, too. The vast majority of the Red Sox lineup is homegrown that they drafted. The vast majority of the Yankees lineup is homegrown because of the way they drafted. Houston's the same thing. What is it about those organizations where it's perceived that they're buying players? They, you know, when you and I know they can trade for Giancarlo Stanton because they can pay him, and the Red Sox can sign a J.D. Martinez. But the teams that need to draft, like the Pirates, for example, where are they missing where the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros are hitting? Because the vast majority of their lineups came through their system.
That's a great question, and I think part of it's just luck. I know that's kind of a boring answer, but, you know, sometimes you get lucky with player development. And, you know, you point to the Astros. Jose Altuve and Dallas Keuchel were not well-regarded as prospects. You know, Altuve was dismissed as being too short. He didn't really walk. He didn't hit for much power, and nobody thought he was going to be, you know, a 330 hitter in the majors. Same with Keuchel.
And I saw him here when he played at Tri-City. I saw him here, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and, you know, you can credit that to the players, their hard work, but a lot of players work hard in the majors and don't, you know, take those kind of leaps. And you can credit to the coaching and development staff. And to be sure, you know, each of these organizations has good coaches, you know, nothing against them. But I think luck really plays a big role in all of this. And, you know, you talk about the Pirates, and for a few years there, it seemed like they had luck on their side. You know, Ray Searidge was considered a wizard with what he did with A.J. Burnett and Francisco Liriano and some others. And yet, now he's kind of under some fire because you look at what Houston's done with Gerrit Cole and Charlie Morton, you know, two former Pirates pitchers. They've seemingly unlocked upside that the Pirates can never get to. So I know it's a boring answer. I know it's not satisfying, but I really do think luck plays a role in this. And, you know, to be fair, the Yankees and, you know, the Red Sox and even the Astros, they have some of the best general managers in baseball. I mean, Brian Cashman, if he's not the best, he's one of the best, and he's proven that throughout his career. And, you know, people do try to dismiss his success because of the payroll, but they never talk about the pressure he's faced and how he had to deal with, you know, let's say a temperamental owner for the first half of his career there. And, you know, he's made a number of great decisions that would have been great decisions no matter where he was. And yes, it helps that he could absorb Giancarlo Stanton's contract, but he also traded for Didi Gregorius and some of these other players when they weren't on the radar. So, you know, there's two sides to that coin. And while luck certainly plays a role, I think Cashman is without a doubt one of the best talent evaluators, in baseball.
RJ, do you like the route the Phillies are taking? There's a lot of homegrown talent there too, but they added in veterans like Arrieta and Sanchez.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because the Phillies rebuild didn't look as promising as it does now about a year ago. You know, a number of their youngsters have kind of stalled, and, you know, to be fair, they do have some good players who have been overlooked. I mean, Cesar Hernandez, their second baseman, he is an on-base machine. He's all of a sudden hitting for power. He's one of the fastest second basemen in baseball. He's talking about a real well-rounded player there. And, you know, you added Arrieta, you added Santana to a mix that also had Odubel Herrera and some interesting young pitchers. And, you know, it's working out for them. I will say, you know, I don't buy into the Phillies being as competitive this season as I do with the Braves. I might be misreading the situation there, but I think the Phillies probably need another offseason. I assume they're going to chase Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, and whomever else this winter. Right. And if they land one of those, hey, you know, all of a sudden the National League East is getting very, very crowded at the top. But right now I see the Phillies as being, you know, the distant third-place team in that division.
Now, let's take it one step further. The Phillies, of course, would be a team that when people think of analytics, they think of Gabe Kapler and his extensive use and his depth of belief in analytics. You wrote a fascinating article a couple of weeks ago about Kevin Cash and his use of Sergio Romo to start the game. Okay? The closer starts the game. He's not a closer. He's an opener. So, I mean, it's something we have to see how it works out, but what was your initial thought when you saw that happen, and now with a little time to think about it, what do you think?
Well, I guess I have my concerns about it still, and I had a lot of concerns at the time, because while I understand that this strategy can, in theory, lead to some advantageous matchups, you're also asking a lot of your starting pitchers who aren't used to either, you know, coming in the game in the second inning or in the first inning when there's runners on base, and I really thought it was just a marginal upgrade at best, you know, a marginal advantage compared to the normal strategy. And, you know, to be fair to the Rays, they've had some more injuries since then. You know, Chris Archer's out. And so I guess I'm just not really a huge fan of it based on what I've seen so far, not just with the results, but, you know, the more I think about the process and, you know, what goes into that. Because, you know, you still have to have talent to pull off any of these strategies. And I think the Rays don't have that talent. You know, their best performances as of late have come from guys like Blake Snell and Archer, who are traditional starting pitchers, and even Nate Eovaldi. So I'm not the biggest fan of it. I think it can be fine if executed, and it wouldn't surprise me if a better team goes out there and executes this really well, and all of a sudden, you know, you see more teams buy in. For instance, you know, the Dodgers seemingly flirted with the idea last week when they started Scott Alexander. But if you're not doing it for platoon advantage purposes, I don't really know that there is an upside to doing it. And for instance, you know, the last two times the Rays have done it, today and I believe it was on Sunday, they followed up a righty with a righty and a lefty with a lefty. And once you start doing that, I just don't think there's any advantage whatsoever, at least not a big enough advantage to actually put your pitchers through the hassle of doing it.
I mean, to me, this is just you and I are just standing in the press box chit-chatting. To me, if I've got a closer, let's say I've got Kimbrel, okay? And I've got two on and one out in the seventh inning, and I think it's a pivotal moment of the game. To me, that's where you use them, not to start the game with them. That to me is where, like, a closer to me can be anytime. And I'll tell you what I'm really impressed with was with something Bruce Bochy did the other night in the fourth inning. Right, he thought he had a chance to break the game open and win any pinch hit with Alan Hansen. Now it paid off, but I mean, to me, that's managing.
Yeah, I agree. And you're basically talking about, you know, the idea of leverage. And you want to be able to use your best players or, you know, your best substitutions or what have you when the game is at, when the game is at its most important moment. And with the opener, you're kind of putting unnecessary pressure on the first inning. And you're sort of locking yourself into things that you can come to regret. I mean, just to use Sergio Romo as an example, you know, he is a pretty good right-on-right reliever. And by using him in the first inning, you're basically ruling out the chance of using him in the sixth or the seventh inning when the game might be, you know, important, when it might have a situation unfold where, you know, you have a right-handed batter up, you have two on, it's a 1-0 game or whatever, and you're trying to preserve that lead. So that's one aspect that I don't think anyone, at least publicly, has really been able to evaluate. And I don't know if the Rays even have an answer for that or any other team considering this. I think there's a lot of, you know, kind of touch and go with it. And, you know, the Rays have come out and said, we're not sure if we're going to continue to use this strategy. They've already, you know, pivoted once this year on their pitching strategy. You know, at the beginning of the year, they had relievers going multiple innings, and they were trying to basically do a piggyback system. So I think it's all in flux. I don't think they even have all the answers, and I sure don't have all the answers. I just think, looking from my perspective, that it's probably one of those strategies that's not going to catch on in a significant way, because I don't think the advantage is significant.
RJ, absolute pleasure. Probably could talk to you for another hour, but that would bore you to death. So I'm not going to do that to you and torture you. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
RJ Anderson from CBSSports.com. Next half hour, Steve Bornstein. We're going to bring him in to talk about the Belmont Stakes. We'll do that next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. All right, Justify, obviously the favorite to win the Belmont Stakes. He'll start in the one position on the rail. I actually think that's a great spot. I really do.
You're the first person that I've heard say that, too.
I think that's a great spot because I think the whole key, if the horse breaks, and this horse has been really good about breaking out of the gate, and Mike Smith does a great job at judging it, that's the shortest trip around the track.
Sure. And the longest race.
I mean, that, to me, whatever yardage you can save in this race, you save it. It's a mile and a half. So I think being in the one hole, I think for this horse, not every horse is like this, but for this horse, the horse that wants to be maybe not just at the lead, but maybe just off the lead. When I mean just off the lead, I mean by a neck. Starting on the rail is great. I mean, that's the quickest trip around the place. Steve Bornstein is going to join us in the next half hour to talk about that. And Sean Leahy, NBC Sports, talk about the Stanley Cup. He is going to join us from Las Vegas, where it's 117. But he has assured us it is a dry heat. Yeah, this is, and then, of course, tonight is the NBA Finals. Andre Iguodala is going to play tonight. This is the line in the sand game for Cleveland. If they want any shot, realistic shot whatsoever, they've got to win tonight. And
you could probably point in more than one direction as to what Cleveland would need to do better tonight. I think probably the first thing I would think of would be a better three-point shooting compared to...
That's why I think Kyle Korver is going to play. I mean, look, there are two things. Number one, let's get to the crux of it. Cleveland's defense, by an NBA standard, is no better than mediocre. I'm talking about a pure NBA standard now. NBA standard defense, Cleveland is mediocre at best. There are 30 teams in the NBA. Cleveland statistically was 29th in the league defensively this past season. That was the big deal with the Celtics Game 7 deals. They held the Celtics to 79 points. The Celtics just didn't shoot the ball well. But you notice in the games the Celtics won, they ran roughshod over Cleveland. But with a young team on the road, that's where they stumbled, and then they got to a seventh game, they didn't handle it. Cleveland's not good enough. This is not good enough. This isn't the best Golden State team. Getting Iguodala back helps. Gives you a really good defender. Gives you another really good scoring option on the floor. If they have Iguodala, I think they beat Houston in five games. But Cleveland just doesn't have enough players. They just don't have enough good players. And it shows above all. It's actually, to me, if I had to pick an area, you could talk about J.R. Smith's crazy play and how that one, you know, just without knowing time and score, it's under the category of you have to be kidding me. But the bottom line is, Cleveland is just not good enough defensively. They've got to hold Golden State under 100 points. I don't care if it's 96, 97, 98. They've got to hold them under 100. I mean, game two, they gave up 122 points. They have no shot.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.